It began as a whisper on the fringes of the internet. Coordinates without a name, a promise without a face. Three treasure hunters, worn thin by years of false leads and dead ends, saw an opportunity too perfect to ignore. A forgotten vault buried deep in the Colorado mountains. Gold untouched, security systems dead. The kind of secret you don't share. But some secrets aren't meant to be unearthed. Some doors aren't meant to be opened. This was no treasure hunt. This was an invitation. The post appeared on three different treasure hunting forums within an hour. Anonymous user, throwaway account, coordinates to a vault in the Colorado mountains. The message was simple. Abandoned government facility, gold reserve still inside, security systems long dead. Marcus Chen saved the coordinates immediately. Sarah Williams screenshotted everything before the post vanished. Jake Morrison already had his gear packed. Something felt wrong about it. The timing was too perfect. The information too clean. But the coordinates checked out on satellite maps, and the three of them had been chasing dead ends for months. Greed won over caution. It always does. The drive took 6 hours through winding mountain roads that grew narrower with each mile. Sarah navigated while Marcus drove their rented SUV, Jake studying topographical maps in the back seat. The coordinates led to a service road that didn't appear on any map. Gravel crunched under their tires as they climbed higher, pine trees closing in on both sides like a tunnel. The road ended at what looked like a maintenance shed, but Marcus noticed something else. There, he pointed through the windshield, behind those trees. They hiked the final quarter mile through dense forest. The structure emerged gradually, concrete gray against the mountainside. Not a building exactly, but something built into the rock itself. Industrial, purposeful. The vault door dominated the entrance, 12 feet tall, 3 feet thick, steel reinforced with something that looked almost organic. Warning symbols covered its surface, but not the usual radiation or biohazard markers they recognized. These were older, stranger. Government surplus auction, Jake said, running his fingers over the symbols. Probably just old military codes. Sarah found the access panel hidden behind a false rock. The electronic lock had been disabled, cables cut and spliced. Someone had been here before them, but recently. The door stood slightly ajar. Marcus pushed it open. The hinges moved silently, too well maintained for an abandoned facility. Inside, emergency lighting cast everything in pale red. The air tasted metallic, filtered and recycled. Corridors stretched in three directions. Walls lined with pipes and ventilation systems that still hummed with power. This wasn't a treasure vault. This was something else entirely. They chose the central corridor. Their flashlight beams revealed doors along both sides, each marked with numbers and symbols that meant nothing to them. Sarah tried one handle. Locked. Jake tried another. The same. The corridor opened into a vast chamber, and that's when they understood. Containment cells lined the walls. Thick glass windows offering glimpses into empty rooms beyond. Control panels sat dark and silent. Monitoring equipment gathered dust on metal tables. Everything designed not to keep people out, but to keep something in. "We need to leave," Sarah whispered. But Marcus had already moved deeper into the chamber, drawn to the center where something massive dominated the space. Not a vault or container, but something that pulsed with its own rhythm. Organic. Alive. The cocoon stood 8 feet tall, its surface slick and translucent. Veins of darker fluid moved beneath the membrane like a slow heartbeat. The air around it felt warmer, humid with a sweetly rotten smell that made their stomachs turn. Jake approached from the other side. "What is this thing?" Sarah backed toward the entrance. "We're leaving. Now." The cocoon pulsed brighter, as if responding to their voices. Something moved inside, pressing against the membrane from within, a shape that might have been a limb, or multiple limbs. Marcus leaned closer, fascination overriding fear. "It's been here for decades. Look at the dust on everything else, but this thing is pristine." The membrane stretched where the shape pressed against it, thin, fragile. "Don't touch it," Sarah said, but Marcus had already reached out. Marcus's fingertip barely grazed the membrane before Sarah grabbed his wrist. But it was too late. Where he touched, the surface dimpled inward like wet plastic, then split. Viscous fluid poured onto the concrete floor, thick as honey but clear as water. The smell hit them immediately. Not decay, but something worse. Something alive and hungry and ancient. The tear widened. More fluid gushed out, pooling around their boots. Jake stumbled backward, slipping on the slick surface. Sarah pulled Marcus away from the cocoon as it collapsed inward like a deflated balloon. What emerged wasn't what they expected. The creature lay motionless in the spreading puddle, curled in on itself. About the size of a large dog, but wrong in every way that mattered. Its skin was translucent gray, revealing dark organs beneath. Multiple limbs folded against its torso, too many joints in each one. No visible eyes, but a mouth that split its head nearly in half. "Is it dead?" Jake whispered. They watched it for long minutes. No movement. No breathing they could detect. The fluid around it had stopped flowing, congealing into a clear gel that clung to their boot soles. Marcus pulled out his phone, started recording. "This is incredible. Some kind of preserved specimen. The government must have been studying it." Sarah kept her distance. Something about the creature's stillness felt wrong. Not dead. Waiting. "We document this and leave," she said. "Call the authorities. Let them handle it." But Jake had moved closer, crouching beside the motionless form. "Look at the bone structure. It's like nothing in any taxonomy. The joints alone would revolutionize our understanding of..." The creature's mouth opened. Not wide. Just a crack, revealing rows of needle-thin teeth. A sound escaped, barely audible. Not quite breathing. Not quite speech. Jake froze. The creature's head turned toward him with mechanical precision. Still no visible eyes, but it oriented on him like it could see perfectly. "Jake," Sarah said, "move away from it." He tried to stand. The creature moved faster than thought, one limb whipping out to wrap around his ankle. Jake fell hard, skull cracking against concrete. Blood pooled beneath his head. The creature flowed over him like liquid, covering his unconscious form in seconds. Where it touched his skin, the flesh began to change, not dissolving, merging. Marcus kept filming even as Sarah screamed. The transformation happened too quickly to fully process. Jake's body convulsed as the creature sank into him, disappearing beneath his skin. His clothes split as his frame expanded, muscles bulging in impossible directions. Then Jake opened his eyes, except they weren't Jake's eyes anymore. They were completely black, reflecting the emergency lighting like mirrors. He stood with fluid grace, head tilting as he studied Marcus and Sarah. When he smiled, his teeth had changed. Sharper, more numerous. "Thank you," Jake said in a voice that was almost his own. Almost. Sarah ran first. Marcus followed but kept his phone out, still recording as they sprinted through the corridors. Behind them, they heard Jake laughing. Not the Jake they knew. Something wearing Jake's voice like an ill-fitting mask. They reached the entrance as the first sounds echoed from deeper in the facility. Wet, tearing sounds. Jake screaming, but not in pain. In ecstasy. Marcus grabbed Sarah's arm as she fumbled with the massive door. "We have to warn people. The authorities need to know what's down there." "What's down there is Jake," Sarah said, her voice breaking. "And something else wearing him." The screaming stopped. In the silence that followed, they heard new sounds. Multiple voices, all slightly off, all wrong. Marcus checked his phone. No signal this deep in the mountains. They'd have to reach the main road. They ran toward their SUV, but Sarah stopped halfway. "Listen." From the facility entrance came the sound of footsteps. Not one set, several, moving in perfect synchronization. Jake emerged first, but he wasn't alone. Three figures followed him, identical in their fluid movements and black mirror eyes. The same face repeated four times, each one smiling with too many teeth. "The multiplication rate," Marcus whispered, understanding flooding through him. "One host becomes multiple entities, exponential growth." Sarah started the engine as the Jake things began walking toward them with unhurried confidence. They had minutes before the creatures reached civilization, maybe less. The SUV's engine roared to life as Sarah floored the accelerator. Gravel sprayed behind them, but in the rearview mirror, the Jake things kept walking, not running, walking with the patience of something that knew it had already won. Marcus fumbled with his phone, desperate for signal bars. "We need to reach the highway. Warn the authorities before..." "Before what?" Sarah's knuckles were white on the steering wheel. "Before we tell them our friend got eaten by something that makes copies of itself?" The service road twisted downward through the pines. Each turn took them further from the facility, but Marcus couldn't shake the feeling they were being followed, not by the creatures they'd left behind, but by something else. Something that had been planning this moment for a very long time. His phone finally caught a single bar of service. Marcus dialed 911, hands shaking as the call connected. 911, what's your emergency? There's been an incident at a government facility in the Colorado Mountains. Coordinates 39.7. The line went dead. No signal again. Sarah took another sharp turn, tires squealing. Try again when we reach the main road. But when they reached the highway, Marcus's phone showed full bars and no service. The display flickered between no network and emergency calls only before going completely dark. "That's impossible," he said, pressing the power button. Nothing. The phone was dead, battery drained despite being fully charged an hour ago. Sarah checked her own phone. Same thing. Dead battery, no power. They drove in silence for 10 minutes before seeing the first sign of civilization. A gas station with a single pickup truck parked outside. Sarah pulled up to the pump as Marcus ran inside. The attendant looked up from his magazine. Young guy, maybe 20, with the bored expression of someone working the night shift in the middle of nowhere. "I need to use your phone," Marcus said. "Emergency." The attendant gestured toward an old payphone mounted on the wall. Marcus fed quarters into the slot and dialed 911 again. This time, the call went through. 911, what's your emergency? Marcus explained as quickly as he could. Government facility. Dangerous organism. Immediate evacuation needed. The dispatcher's questions came rapid fire, but Marcus could hear something in the background. Other calls coming in, lots of them. "Sir, we're receiving multiple reports of power outages across the state. Can you confirm your location?" Marcus gave their coordinates, but the line was already crackling with interference. "Hello? Hello?" Dead air. He tried calling again. No dial tone. The payphone was as dead as their cell phones. Sarah appeared beside him, face pale. The radio in the car just went to static. All stations. Through the gas station windows, Marcus watched the attendant trying to restart his register. The electronic displays flickered and died. Even the fluorescent lights overhead began to dim. "We need to keep moving," Sarah said. "Find someone with a working radio, a police station." They climbed back into the SUV, but the engine turned over sluggishly. The dashboard lights flickered like the gas station's fluorescence. Marcus checked his watch. The digital display was blank. Sarah managed to start the engine on the third try. As they pulled back onto the highway, Marcus noticed something in the side mirror. The gas station's lights had gone out completely. In the darkness, he could just make out a figure standing beside the building. Too far to see clearly, but something about its posture looked familiar. The way it held its head. The fluid way it moved. "Drive faster," he said. They passed two more gas stations, both dark. A roadside diner with cars in the parking lot, but no lights in the windows. A truck stop where 18-wheelers sat silent, their running lights dead. Sarah found a police station 20 miles down the highway. The building was dark, but a single patrol car sat in the parking lot. She pulled up beside it, engine still running. Marcus approached the patrol car cautiously. The officer inside wasn't moving. Slumped over the steering wheel, radio microphone dangling from his limp hand. But as Marcus got closer, he could see the officer's chest rising and falling, alive but unconscious. He tapped on the window. The officer stirred, lifted his head. His eyes were completely black, The thing wearing the officer's face smiled with too many teeth. Marcus stumbled backward as the patrol car door opened. The officer thing stepped out with that same fluid grace they'd seen in Jake. Behind him, more figures emerged from the dark police station, all moving in perfect synchronization. Sarah had the SUV in reverse before Marcus reached the passenger door. They sped away as the officer things watched with patient interest. "It's spreading," Marcus said, his voice barely a whisper, "faster than should be possible." Sarah's hand shook on the steering wheel. "The electronics, the power grids, it's not just taking people." Marcus pulled out his notebook, the only thing that still worked. He began writing by the dashboard's dying light, documenting everything they'd witnessed. The creature's emergence, Jake's transformation, the systematic failure of all technology. "It's coordinated," he wrote, "intelligent. Each host becomes multiple entities, but they're all connected somehow, working toward the same goal." He looked up from his writing. The highway stretched ahead of them, empty and dark. No other cars, no lights from houses or businesses, just darkness spreading in every direction. Sarah's voice was barely audible. "How many people live in Colorado?" Marcus didn't answer. He was thinking about exponential growth. 1 becomes 4. 4 becomes 16. 16 becomes 64. The mathematics were simple and terrifying. By morning, there might not be anyone left to warn. Sarah found the abandoned ranger station just as their SUV's engine finally died. The building sat dark against the mountainside, but its generator shed still had fuel. Marcus managed to get emergency power running to a single room while Sarah searched for any working communication equipment. The ranger's office contained files they should have found hours ago, incident reports dating back decades, government memos with heavy redaction marks, research documents that painted a picture neither of them wanted to see. Marcus read by flashlight while Sarah tried the emergency radio. Static filled the airwaves on every frequency, but occasionally they caught fragments of voices, panicked reports from cities going dark, military communications cut short mid-transmission. "Listen to this," Marcus said, holding up a folder marked Project Chrysalis, Classification Level Black. The documents inside were older than they'd expected, much older. The creature wasn't some recent government experiment. It had been contained since 1952, discovered in a cave system after reports of missing persons in the area. The initial research team had made the same mistake they had. One touch, one breach of containment, but the military response had been swift. The entire research facility was sealed, the creature contained before it could spread beyond the mountain. For 70 years, it had waited in that cocoon, sustained by some biological process they didn't understand. "The online post," Sarah said, looking up from a communication log. "It wasn't random." Marcus found the relevant section. Deep in the technical analysis was a paragraph that made his blood freeze. The creature demonstrated what researchers termed technological symbiosis. It could interface with electronic systems, learning and adapting to new forms of communication as they developed. The internet, social media, digital networks that hadn't existed in 1952. "It learned," Marcus whispered, "decades of monitoring our communications, understanding how we work, how we think. It knew exactly what would bring treasure hunters to that vault." Sarah's radio crackled. A voice emerged from the static, clear enough to understand. "Containment breach confirmed at multiple sites. Entity demonstrates rapid adaptation to modern infrastructure. Recommend immediate implementation of Protocol 7. The transmission cut to static again. Marcus kept reading. Protocol 7 was mentioned in the older documents. Complete electromagnetic pulse deployment. Destroy all electronic infrastructure to prevent the creature from using it for coordination and spread. But the file suggested Protocol 7 had never been tested. The researchers weren't even sure it would work. Sarah tried different frequencies, searching for any sign of organized resistance. Instead, she found something worse. Automated emergency broadcasts from major cities, all delivering the same message in synthetic voices. "Remain in your homes. Do not attempt to flee. Integration will be swift and painless." The voices weren't quite right. Too perfect. Too synchronized. like the Jake things, but speaking through radio transmitters instead of human vocal cords. Marcus found the final document in the folder, a handwritten note from the original research team leader, dated 3 days before the facility was sealed. The entity is not malevolent in any human sense. It simply reproduces. But its method of reproduction requires complete integration with host nervous systems. What we call death, it considers birth. What we call invasion, it considers evolution. There is no negotiating with a force of nature. The note continued, "If containment fails, the spread will be exponential and irreversible. Current projections suggest complete planetary integration within 72 hours of initial breach. The entity's intelligence grows with each host absorbed. By the time authorities recognize the threat, it will already control the communication networks they depend on for coordination." Sarah's radio picked up a new signal. Not official emergency broadcasts, but something else. Civilian voices, scattered and desperate, saw them walking in perfect formation down Highway 70. Hundreds of them, all with the same face. "My brother called me, but it wasn't his voice anymore. Kept asking me to come home. Said everything would be better if I just came home." The power grid is completely down from Denver to Colorado Springs, but some of the streetlights are still working, moving in patterns like they're signaling to each other. Marcus checked his watch. Still dead, but the ranger station's wall clock showed 3:17 a.m., less than 8 hours since they'd breached the containment. If the projections were accurate, they had maybe 64 hours before the spread reached global saturation. But the radio report suggested it was moving faster than even the worst-case scenarios predicted. Sarah found a detailed map of Colorado's population centers. She marked the locations mentioned in the radio transmissions, tracing the spread pattern. "It's not random," she said. "Look at this." The creature was targeting communication hubs first. Radio stations, cell towers, internet infrastructure. Each successful integration gave it access to wider networks, faster coordination, more efficient spread. Marcus realized they were witnessing something unprecedented in human history. Not just an invasion, but a complete systematic replacement. The creature wasn't destroying humanity. It was absorbing it, incorporating human knowledge and capabilities into something larger. The final radio transmission they intercepted came from what sounded like a military command center. "All units, this is command. We've lost contact with NORAD, Peterson, and Fort Carson. Satellite imagery shows coordinated movement from multiple population centers. Estimate 40% integration rate across the front range. Recommend immediate evacuation to..." Static swallowed the rest. Sarah turned off the radio. In the silence that followed, they could hear something new. A sound like wind through trees, but rhythmic, purposeful, getting closer. Marcus gathered the documents, stuffing them into his backpack. Evidence that would never reach anyone who could use it. The creature had already won the information war. They had been perfect pawns, greedy, curious, and completely unprepared for what they would unleash. The anonymous post had been crafted specifically for people like them. Treasure hunters who would ignore warning signs, who would touch what should never be touched. As they prepared to flee deeper into the mountains, Marcus understood the final, terrible truth. The creature hadn't escaped. They had freed it. Every choice they'd made, from following the coordinates to breaching the containment, had been exactly what it wanted them to do. Humanity's extinction would be their legacy. The ranger station went dark behind them as they climbed higher into the mountains. Marcus carried the documents. Sarah led with the last working flashlight. Below them, the valleys filled with a sound like breathing. Synchronized. Patient. In 72 hours, maybe less, there would be no one left to read the files they'd found. No one to understand what had really happened in that vault. The creature had waited decades for the right moment, the right technology, the right fools to set it free. The trap had worked perfectly. Above the dark valleys, the last scraps of human power flickered and died. Phones silent, lights gone, radio waves carrying not warnings but a new language. The thing they had touched was no longer contained. It was learning, multiplying, spreading. By the time the world understood, it would be too late. Cities would go quiet. Voices on the airwaves would no longer be human. the network built to connect the planet would instead guide its transformation. In the end, Marcus and Sarah weren't just witnesses. They were the spark, the first link in a chain that would stretch across the globe until there was no one left to remember who opened the vault or why. The vault wasn't a secret. It was a trap, and humanity walked right in.